In Euclidean geometry, the shortest distance between two points is always a straight line. In electoral politics, however, the quickest or at least surest path to office seems more often than not to involve a whole lot of zigs, zags, and squiggles, at least when it comes to the boundaries of the territory the candidate is seeking to represent. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this week's program, we'll zoom in on the long-running battle over how Indiana draws its congressional and legislative maps. With the 10-year census and another round of redistricting right around the corner, the stakes couldn't be higher. So don't go away. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue researchers are finding new ways to treat cancer, provide drug-free therapies, advance wound repairs, reduce chronic illness symptoms, helping people, changing lives. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.
The desire to gain a partisan advantage through the drawing of political boundaries is almost as old as our nation. The term gerrymandering first appeared in 1812 in a political cartoon lampooning a statewide redistricting plan approved by then-Massachusetts Governor Elbridge Gerry. Now, one of the districts in the Boston area was said to look like a salamander, so the cartoonists combined Gerry and salamander and came up with gerrymander, or gerrymander as we now call it. Now, since then, minority candidates and would-be reformers have assigned plenty of other labels, including unfair, unprincipled, and undemocratic. But for many of those who benefit from this brand of political cartography, voluntarily abandoning the practice seems all but unthinkable. And that brings us to our discussion with Republican Senator John Ruckelshaus of Indianapolis, Republican Representative Jerry Tor of Carmel, Democratic Representative Justin Moed of Indianapolis, and Julia Vaughn, longtime policy director of the watchdog group Common Cause Indiana. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I have a lot of burning questions. The most important, why do we say gerrymandering instead of gerrymandering? Are we getting this whole thing wrong? Maybe it would pass if we knew what to call it. Is that?
Well, I think that'd be a good start, John. I really do. A lot of people think a lot of these districts, from the public, you'd spill a cup of coffee on a map, and that's how the districts end up. So
that's
maybe
not,
we call that the coffee
don't
map.
Don't pop my bubble. I thought that's what we were doing here. All right. How pronounced is, I'm going to go around the table and see here, how pronounced is, not pronounced in the sense of phonetics, but how widespread is gerrymandering in Indiana? And if it is, why is that a problem? Jerry Tor.
Well, one of the reasons that I've been involved in this effort, and I have passed two bills out of the House, one in 2006 and I think 2014, somewhere in there. To create a
when none of this was fashionable.
To create,
well, I guess
to create. Well, yeah,
certainly wasn't. Certainly wasn't.
Well, yeah,
didn't have the head of steam that some of them have now.
Well, and neither party has the higher moral ground in this because in 2006 there were only about two or three Democrats that voted for that House bill. Both times they died in the Senate,
which is controlled by Republicans, by the way.
That's correct. That's
it has
correct.
Been since 1978, yeah. If I'm not
well,
mistaken.
Well, that's, yeah, because
before you were born.
It's not a
but
Republican,
take my word for it.
Right. It's not a Republican-Democrat issue. It's party in power versus the party that's not in power, wherever you are. But
sort of like giving back the budget surplus. Yeah, yeah that's another one of those.
But I lived through two decades of extremely gerrymandered districts drawn by the House Democrats back in the days when the Democrats controlled the House, Republicans, the Senate, and they kind of had a handshake agreement. We won't mess with yours if you don't mess with ours. And so each House would kind of do their own maps. And so that's what got me first interested, and that's what's frustrating now is that we've had so much turnover and had so many new members in our caucus. We now only have a handful of us that have ever served in the minority. And so that kind of changes perspective of folks. Unfortunately.
Well, here we have somebody in John Ruckelshaus who arguably lost his House seat because the district disappeared.
That is correct.
After the 90 census.
Right.
You're back now, of course, so you have that perspective. And also I read recently that this is sort of in the family blood. Somebody sent you a clipping recently that a Senator Ruckelshaus was fighting for to do away with gerrymandering, and it was your father in 1956?
Yeah, Representative Hatfield, yes, thank you, John. Representative Hatfield actually sent me an article, a copy of an article from the Evansville Courier-Journal back in the day, and my father, back in the 1950s, actually was helping sponsor a bill to take this issue off the table, to not have, that the legislature would not draw the maps. But back to your original point, Jerry, you're exactly right. I was in the minority in 1990. I was elected in 1990 to the Indiana House of Representatives, and I was elected in the minority. Democrats had a 52-48 advantage. Then they drew the maps, and as crafty as they were, they literally went down my street, drew my house in with another state rep. I was out. John, I can't even color in the lines, let alone do that. I thought that was very unique. So this is personal.
It is personal for you then. Julie Vaughn, it's become personal for you because you've been doing this. I think you were in kindergarten when you started fighting this fight, maybe in 1994, I think, 25 years by my calculation.
Yeah. Well, gerrymandering is just unhealthy for the democratic process because it limits the choices that voters have. We've got too many non-competitive districts in our state, and that hurts turnout. You know, when the outcome of the election has been predetermined by the map maker, voters aren't that important. And so they don't come out, they don't participate, and I think they feel that they're not being heard. Every citizen's vote should count equally, but in gerrymandered districts, that's not the case.
Have you seen evidence that that has affected turnout in those areas?
Oh, and absolutely.
I saw a map of from the past November, and if you looked at both Senate and House legislative races, now not every Senate seat was up, of course, but still, there were a lot. If you shaded in areas where there was only one person on the ballot, it was a good chunk of the state.
And particularly in places like Indianapolis, the urban areas where Democrat districts have been packed to be, you know, 70-80% one party, it's very difficult to recruit a member of the minority party to run when, again, the election is a foregone conclusion. You know, back in 2014, Indiana had the lowest voter turnout in the country. We ranked 50th, and I think a big reason was 44% of state house races were uncontested that year. There was only one major party candidate in the November election. If people don't have anybody to vote for, it's not an irrational choice for them to not show up. And I think, you know, I want to expand on Representative Torr's point earlier. Back in the days when we had Democrats in control of the House and Republicans in control of the Senate, they absolutely, you know, took care of their own in the legislative maps. But what that meant was for our congressional districts, we actually had some competition because those were in play and they had to compromise on those maps. And so we saw far more competition in the previous decade in our congressional elections than we have had over the past decade. And I think that actually ultimately impacts turnout a lot because those are top of the ticket races.
And you said we were 50th, right, in turnout?
In 2014, we were
dead last. I'm going to make one correction. I believe we were 51st because the count I saw actually threw the
District of Columbia
in. So if we're going to make foam fingers that say 50, stop the order. We're going 51.
We are definitely not number one.
Justin Moed, now again, a lot of people at the table have had experiences personally, have been on the downside of this. You happened to enter elective office after the last map was drawn.
Sure.
So what's your interest? And I know you have one because a couple years ago, and it may be a distant memory now, you were on the much discussed, still often cited, special study committee that looked at this issue, and a lot of people at the time thought had come up with the answer. So, what's the passion here for you?
So you know, I mean, this issue has been studied several times, I think, by the General Assembly, and there's a lot of talk about years in past, but the facts of the matter remain that Republicans have been in charge for nearly a decade. Democrats haven't drawn the maps in almost two decades, and there's been a failure of leadership to move this issue forward. And if you look at the maps that we're currently under, as Julia pointed out, 44% of the seats in 2014 were not opposed. In the House alone, 33 members went unopposed in the last election cycle. That's a third. A third of the chamber didn't have an opponent.
Or some Democrats went
both ways,
challengers,
yeah, right,
too. So it's
right.
Not as if it's...
Well, because gerrymandering can be an advantage to make certain districts so far one way that no one would run.
And hence you get back to the notion of packing,
sure,
versus cracking,
right,
where you're, which
right,
maybe we'll talk about some of
and
the nomenclature.
And if you look at Mike Braun got 52%, yet in the Senate, 80% of the seats are controlled by Republicans. in the House, 67%. So, I mean, I think that you can't point to one way or another who has gerrymandered in the past or now, but the facts remain that now we are not taking any action moving forward to try and remove this completely unfair process that only limits competition and is an advantage to one political party or one ideology and polarizes the two chambers.
Now, before folks watching or listening at home scratch their heads and say, gee, this panel seems to all be more or less in agreement, even though they have different party affiliations and are in different chambers, we did invite individuals who, I won't say they're, nobody purports to be pro-gerrymandering, I guess, for the most part, but they were opposed to some of the measures that have, the reform measures, and they declined. So I guess I'll play devil's advocate. I did see in Politico magazine a piece titled Gerrymandering Isn't Evil, and it said that the notion that it's somehow bad is this, ludicrous, they didn't use that word, that they think it's a myth that's been perpetuated. Is it just a myth, or why does it deserve all the agitation?
You know, I don't think that's true, but since there is nobody here from
that is my attempt to be, so.
Well, since there's nobody here from the other side, let me play devil's advocate a little bit and tell you a couple of things that I hear from some folks who don't think we ought to move forward with this. One, they make the argument, the Indiana Constitution does say that at least our legislative maps will be done by the General Assembly. So some say they don't believe it's constitutional to give it off to a nonpartisan commission as we put forth. In,
even if the final vote is cast by...
That was my conclusion, is that I think the mechanism in the bills I passed and the recommendation from the study committee is it does have to come back for a final vote. I don't think anybody disagrees that that has to happen because of the Constitution. But nevertheless, there's disagreement about whether that's constitutional. There's also the factor that one of the things the study committee looked at is it more important to make districts competitive or more in district to keep so-called communities of interest together? And everybody on the study committee agreed that it was more important to keep the communities of interest together. So when you consider that, in some areas, the people actually almost redistrict themselves by choosing where to live with people of like minds.
Yeah, John, do you mind if I piggyback on top of that? Jerry, that's exactly right. And even though we're all on the same page and we do believe in an independent redistricting commission, one of the things that we find ourselves, it would be a real challenge even if this bill passes if we had a redistricting commission, because what's happened all over the country, not just Indiana, is that for the most part, Democrats have been more centered in the urban areas. The suburban areas, where districts that Jerry and I represent, are the more true competitive districts, not only in Indiana but in America, but the rural districts are the ones that tend to be more Republican right now. And I'll also submit, very interesting, when I served in the Indiana General Assembly between 1990 and 1991, there were two Democrats from Southern Indiana, two Republicans from Southern Indiana. Two Republicans from Southern Indiana, basically Washington Street South, or as we would say, south of 40. Well, today, I think there's only two Democrats that are actually coming from there. So there's been a true political alignment from the South, and I think that's probably ushered in more of the supermajorities. Again, Jerry and I agree and believe in a redistricting commission, but that will make the whole issue even more complicated.
And that's what I want to get toward. And by the way, just to show that this is nonpartisan, Illinois has the opposite problem. You talk about how suburban Republicans are trying to diminish the impact of Democratic urban voters. Chicago, it's just the opposite. Right. People complain that they're trying to reach out into the suburbs. So this gets back to our notion that this is nonpartisan or bipartisan or whatever you want to call it. You've watched this around the country. I mean, states are dealing with this. Some states have commissions, independent commissions. Some have commissions that are appointed by political office holders. Some have backup commissions that are in place if they can't come to terms.
There are a number of different models that Indiana could choose from. I think the thing that is critical is the states that have moved forward, by and large, are states that have ballot initiatives, where your citizens can go out, collect signatures, put this issue on the ballot, and voters vote on it directly. That's a whole lot easier than asking legislators, who are the first-hand beneficiaries of gerrymandering, to change the process. process. But absolutely, our neighbors in Michigan, Ohio, have moved forward with reform that was passed.
Michigan this past year, and yeah, I think Colorado, initiative. Maybe Utah.
And
there were several states.
The Michigan system is fascinating. They are actually going to just solicit members of their commission from the general public. You could just get a piece of mail from the Secretary of State of Michigan inviting you to apply
for a seat on the redistricting commission. And I'm sure nobody with viewpoints will be lining up to one way or the other wearing the cloak of independence.
There are a lot of different ways to compose these commissions.
And I think there were four on the ballot this past November in four states, and I think
they all passed.
Yep. So now this committee, we've talked about the study committee. You did want an independent commission.
Sure.
That was the recommendation. Did you specify you wanted how many members? How would it be appointed? I mean, what was the dream?
Nine.
Well, I know that's what's in the bills that these gentlemen have put
forward. I think what's most important, though, is that anything almost could be better than the system we currently have. And I think that our caucus would be very willing and open to a discussion about what that looks like in the end, so long as we move something forward, so long as that this process of where we get to pick the voters that vote for us as opposed to the voters picking us. I think that we need to move forward on this issue. I think that getting into the details, those are ways that bills die for ulterior motives. I think at the end of the day, I think that we want to see something move forward that puts power back in the hands of the voters, that increases competition in districts, that makes sure that incumbents aren't protected year after year, where we have 33 members, a third of the chamber, not even tested on the ballot, not even held accountable for the votes they make. And I think that that's what we'd like to seize.
Now, in the interest of time, I'll do a shortcut here and say that at the table here, we have two people who authored or co-authored legislation that would have created the kind of independent commission you're describing, Justin Moed. And we had, from the House side, we had 1011 and Senate Bill 91. Correct. Neither got a hearing. So we can end that discussion and move on to what may be practical, and that is what's still alive at this point is Senate Bill 105, which would basically say, hey, keep communities of interest together, don't pay attention to incumbency. If you vary from our guidelines, you have to explain it. I mean, are you enthusiastic about that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm the co-author of that bill. Senator Walker has been the author of that. He authored this, and I think he's worked with Julia on multiple occasions on crafting this bill.
Yes,
correct.
Passed last
he's a
year.
Very well-intended, a very thoughtful man. He's done a good job with this. We did pass that out of the Senate twice now, and it's in Jerry's, it's over in the House right now with these two fine gentlemen.
Where it may or may not get a hearing.
Right, and we hope it does get a hearing.
Tim Wesko, who's the chair of from Osceola, the chair of elections, he has said some of it seems redundant, that it's already covered by federal law, or the notion that, you know, you don't necessarily have to pay attention to the guidelines if you explain them away. What good does that do? I don't want to put words in his mouth, but is this what do you think the chances are in the House, and what words do you have for your colleague from the caucus there, encouraging him to pursue this?
Well, I don't want to put words in his mouth either, but I did talk to him late yesterday in preparation for the show. I was going to ask him whether or not he intended to hear 105. He has not ruled it out, but he did say he has other important bills, only a couple of meetings left, one of which is I may be late for when I get out of here. But so he said...
If the bill doesn't get heard, you're going to blame me,
basically. Oh, no, it's his decision whether it gets heard or not.
I thought you were trying to throw that off
of
me.
No, of course not. But I got the impression that he thought that it was probably not real necessary. If a legislature that will pass Senate Bill 105, I would think, would pass maps using that criteria without it being in statute. Seems to me.
Except for the incumbent blind provision and communities of interest, you know, having a particular concern to identify those and keep them intact when appropriate. But I think the real benefit to Senate Bill 105 is it provides more transparency. When you have to deviate from those accepted standards, you would have to explain why. And so I think that's a key piece. It's a very opaque process. Now it happens behind closed doors. It's controlled by one party. And so we need more transparency. We need more information about what factors went into the drawing of each individual district. So that, I think, would be the real benefit of Senate Bill 105.
I mean, how enforceable would this, another beef that critics have is, you know, say incumbency doesn't matter. Well, and you could do it blindly, but theoretically, you're still mathematics and chance, you know, I'm no gambler, but you're going to have some incumbents who are in some pretty safe districts. How do you explain away something you didn't do? I mean, is it just, is it a recipe, Justin Moed, for finger pointing each way and saying, I don't think you did this honestly? I mean, how do you know what's in the heart of the map drawers?
Well, I mean, I certainly think if you create an independent commission that's separate from the legislature, there's at least that layer of protection that it's not the very people who get to put their name on the ballot and run voting on the maps and the lines that they're going to run in. And so I think creating some independent commission is at least one protection. But I think that certainly we need to look at the membership of that and make sure that they're honorable people. I think we can find those people here in Indiana to serve on that in a way that is done nonpartisan, in a way without motive behind it. I think that we can do that.
And I think those bills, again, just to crib notes, cheat sheet here, if I'm not mistaken, it would have been a 9-member commission, yeah. 4 appointees from legislative caucus leaders, and then 5 appointed by a nominating committee, which the nominating committee would be appointed by the presidents of the 5 public universities in the state. So you Correct. Have several layers. Okay, Correct. Not going to happen, so I Correct. Guess. But at least you know what might have happened. So what is the best hope at this point? Is it to look at the courts? Now, we have litigation, certainly, that's been brewing for a long time. A lot of attorneys from Indianapolis are actually heavily involved in Michigan. Then next week, if I'm not mistaken, the U.S. Supreme Court is scheduled to hear oral arguments in a case involving the states of Maryland and North Carolina, I believe.
That's
which,
right.
again, is interesting because in one case, the people crying foul are Democrats, and in the other state, Republicans are crying foul.
Right.
Is this going to take the courts to bring about action?
You know, it might. It'll take either the courts or some change. And we've seen massive turnover in the Indiana General Assembly in years, like, for instance, after Watergate, and I think the 64 election, where it was not driven at all by the individual candidates on the ballot for the state legislature, but was driven by a national tide that you couldn't overcome. And so if we see that happen again, that might change some folks' minds.
Julia Vaughn, what do you think it'll take? Are you watching? You'll be watching oral arguments and listening
absolutely.
Closely next week.
And we're going to have a rally in March at the federal building to the state house to show solidarity with our colleagues who are fighting this fight at the Supreme Court. We need the Supreme Court to step in. They need to issue a decision once and for all that partisan gerrymandering is unconstitutional and decide upon an objective standard, which they can measure, okay, when does gerrymandering go too far as to actually impact the rights of individual voters. If they would do that, I think we would see renewed enthusiasm by the Indiana General Assembly for creating a citizens commission, because they know that voters will have a tool to hold them accountable for the 2021 maps if they are gerrymandered. So we really need the Supreme Court to step in. Not fully confident that they will do so. We're really putting a lot of our chips on John Roberts. You know, he's got Hoosier roots, so
Hoosier,
we know
yeah.
that he's got some good common sense, and we hope he steps
well,
in.
Well, a lot of people said the same things prior to, what was it, 2004, a case that a lot of people cite now where it was 4 justices basically said, I don't know how you could ever decide this. 4 said they thought there might be mechanisms, but they didn't know quite what they were. And then I believe Anthony Kennedy, right. even then being sort of the swing voter, sort of was I don't in the middle, but I mean it was unsatisfactory for both sides to really. Do you feel that there are hope that this will be different?
Well, first of all, I'm always hopeful. I'm a Cubs fan, so I never give up. Secondly, is Representative Tor, Representative Moed, and I, we're going to play through the whistle. Nothing is done, nothing is dead until the legislature's sine die is done on April 29th this year. But I do have, notwithstanding whatever happens in Indiana, I do have a sneaking suspicion that the courts will have some say into this issue long term for the United States.
And Justin Boyd, what can be done? We're about to wrap up here, but sure. I mean, there have been rallies, there have been letter writing campaigns. Is the die cast one way or the other? Are we just waiting to see the results, basically?
I mean, you're asking if the fox is going to give up his job watching the hen house. And I think it's going to take the courts to move this issue. There's a lot to lose for those who are gaining from gerrymandering. And I think that it's going to take someone who's, again, outside of this, an independent body, the courts, from the legislature to make this decision.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. I think I just got a call that this table has been extracted from the districts. You're no longer, by the time you get back to the State House, perhaps in the countries you or the districts you originated. Thank you very much for this discussion. I appreciate your willingness to come and share your thoughts on an important topic that may or may not prevail this session. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator John Ruckelshaus of Indianapolis, Republican Representative Jerry Torr of Carmel, Democratic Representative Justin Moed of Indianapolis, and Julia Vaughn, Policy Director of Common Cause Indiana. The pendulum of criminal justice reform swings from lock 'em up to let 'em loose and back again. Where's it now? We'll find out on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. Ed, we always hear, you know, the clock is ticking, not just this session, but for this issue to be addressed in time for it to matter. Talk about that. I mean, we have the census. That's already circled, I think, on the federal calendar.
With some court cases.
With some court cases thrown in. If it doesn't happen this year, theoretically something could happen next year, but election year, not likely, I'm guessing.
Right, and we need to redraw these districts in 2021 if we want to have a constitutional amendment to change the way that we do it through perhaps an independent commission. And we need to get that done. Well, we may have already needed to have gotten that done for a couple of elections, but we need to do something if there is going to be change, obviously. And next year it's going to be very difficult to get something through, and this is the opportunity. But we're also down to the last couple of weeks of the session, and that poses its own difficulties as well.
You mentioned the public initiative option that some states have pursued. Hoosiers aren't known for their ballot initiatives. I mean, it's not in our makeup. We just
do you think
that's very realistic?
No, and you look at the 40,000 foot view, and I think the governor mentioned last week that this really is a Republican state. It's not necessarily a case of gerrymandering, you know, redrawing these districts.
You're such a traditionalist going back to gerrymandering.
Well, I'm picking up on what you said in the roundtable there. I learned something today. The governor has mentioned, look, you know, you go down to the basic level, the county level, and about 90%, I think he said 89% of the county commissioners are Republicans. You know, this is a Republican state. And yes, it is. And if the Democrats had control of the House and the Senate, and they had the governor, and they wanted to draw the maps the way that they wanted to do it within the constraints of statutory and case law, it would be very difficult for them to get a majority of safe districts. Impossible. You look at the population centers in the state, and the Democrats do very well in the urban areas. And as we heard in the roundtable, you know, southern Indiana has just totally flipped for them. So there's a real difficulty in doing that. I think there's only one Republican in the legislature, John Ruckelshaus, whose district was actually won by Hillary Clinton last time.
Very good. Well, we shall see. Ed, as always, I appreciate your insight. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and my colleague Ed Feigenbaum, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House coverage. Until next week, take care.
Purdue startups Speak Modalities, helping children and families coping with nonverbal autism to develop communication skills, helping people, changing lives. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.